country. Here are night call special phone numbers. From the East and Midwest, call Collect at area code 212-749-3311. From the West at 212-749-3357. And from the New York area at 866-5010. Now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. It may be hard for most of us who read a paper, listen to radio, or watch television to believe nowadays that the present talk of revolution in American terms was not invented by black militants or bearded campus rebels. The Socialist Labor Party has been around for a long time, in fact, for some 82 years. They've been advocating revolution since the year they were founded in 1876, and they've been running presidential candidates every 4 years since 1892. This year's candidate is a machine assembler from Cambridge, Massachusetts, named Henning Blomain. He wants to talk about just what sort of an American revolution he's in favor of and why he is opposed to communism as he is to capitalism. Before I give out our special night call numbers again, I'd like to remind you that the sooner you call in with your questions or your comments, the better a chance you have to get on the air with them. So you may call us from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. You may call us from the West at area code 212-749-3357. That's area code 212-749-3357. And in the New York area, we welcome your calls on 866-5010. Mr. Blomain, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Shields.
And thank you so much for being with us.
I'm happy to be on your program.
Just what sort of an American revolution do you, as the presidential candidate of the Socialist Labor Party, want to see?
Establishment of a socialist industrial republic, and this can only be achieved in our land by the constitutional means, using the ballot, advocating through our political system the advocacy of the abolition of capitalism in a peaceable way, and backing up that right with the necessary economic might by urging the working class to organize themselves into socialist industrial unions in all of the industries, the social services, and take and hold and operate these industries in the interest of society as a whole. We will then have common ownership. We will have production for use. Everyone will receive the full social value of his toil. Our political organization will function merely to abolish the political state and hand the reins of government over to the industrial administration, which will result from the nomination and election by the workers themselves of their representatives in their shops, in their plants, factories, mills, mines, railroads, and on the land, and industrial representatives in the Industrial Congress.
The Socialist Labor Party's goal is a classless society based on collective ownership and control of industries and social services. What is collective ownership and control?
Well, collective ownership may be compared to something similar to our approach to the streets, to the public buildings, the public libraries, our museums. Everyone in America can enter these and enjoy them, simply because they belong to all of the people. And as long as everyone behaves himself, these are open to anyone. Well, we want the industries of this nation, which today are socially or collectively operated, to become socially or collectively owned by all of the people, to be administered by the working class or the people of America through their elected industrial representatives.
When you say that you would like to remove the country away from its political program as we know it today in a capitalistic society and inaugurate a socialist labor party program, isn't this still being political?
Oh, no. Political means territorial representation. And in addition to that, the political state itself functions merely as the executive committee of the ruling class, which in the instance of capitalist society means the capitalist owners of America, and this is represented by approximately 500 of the largest corporations of America, and it is their political state. In spite of the fact the people nominate and elect candidates of the Republican and Democratic parties, when these individuals step into office, they have to administer the political state in the interest of the capitalist class. Hence, political government is necessary in a class-divided society. It not only functions as the executive committee of the ruling class, but it also functions as a means of maintaining order and keeping the working class in its state of being subject to the best interest of the capitalist class, that is, in terms of producing all of the wealth and receiving in return only a living wage.
Mr. Blumen, what are your chances?
Well, I think our chances, historically at least, are certain. We know that the present conditions in America are of such a character that they mitigate not only against an understanding of the program of the Socialist Labor Party, but they hinder it for the moment. But this doesn't necessarily mean that the Socialist Labor Party isn't getting its message across, that increasing numbers of the working class are becoming interested in our program. There's a great sickness in our society, and everybody is wondering why. And the Socialist Labor Party has the answers.
Then you're not running to win, you're running to put over a program.
That is true. But of course, anything can happen under this capitalist system. It's capable of creating, not willingly on the part of the ruling class, but because of its inherent contradictions, it's capable of creating such a serious economic and social crisis that this in itself will awaken the working class to the full realization that capitalism can no longer function and provide them with even a meager living, and they will listen then to the program of the Socialist Labor Party.
In your literature and in a part of the program, the Socialist Party, so the Socialist Labor Party states that the prime evil of our age is not war, it is not the poverty and the misery that exists, it is not racism, though these are monstrous evils. The prime evil of our age is the capitalist system that creates all these horrors. Now, may we take for just a moment, if the Socialist Labor Party was to be elected, what would you do with a particular industry, and how would you administer it under the Socialist Labor Party?
Well, I think first we have to recognize that capitalism, because of its imposition of the wage system upon the majority of the people, and mark you, our capitalist class is a mere handful compared to our total population, who are wage workers, or some of whom receive a salary, which is only a euphonious name for wage, that this class of ours is subjected to social conditions of unemployment, of poverty, and misery, and suffering. And these people who are in this condition, including the blacks of America, in sheer frustration and disgust with the conditions under which they live, which are imposed by capitalism, they rebel in all manner of ways. And of course, not understanding that it is necessary to attack the cause of the evil, that thus far they have only been dealing with the effects. And it becomes necessary that we take time out to study these causes, or particularly how capitalism produces these social problems. And once we recognize that, we'll organize to get rid of it and establish a society of abundance and collective ownership and brotherhood for all.
Mr. Blumen, we'll take our first call tonight from New York. Mrs. Donner is hearing Night Call over WRVR. Uh-huh. Mrs. Donner, good evening.
Yes, good evening.
Thank you for calling.
I have two questions. There's been a lot of talk about liberal socialism in Czechoslovakia. Would you please define what is liberal socialism?
Madam, that doesn't make any difference what you call socialism. You can call it liberal, anti-liberal, Republican, Democratic, or anything you like. But if what you call these names Marx and Frederick Engels, then it is not socialism. Now, what is socialism in the term, in the words of Marx and Engels? It means a classless society. It means production for use. It means we will have an administration of things under the control of the rank and file. It means abolition of private ownership and even of state ownership of the industries and the land. And now, if we take a look at the Soviet Union and its satellites in China and Cuba, what do we discover? They have a wage system. They have production for sale with a view to profit. They have a political state. They have economic classes. They have every single characteristic that equates it very, very closely with the capitalism we have here in America and throughout the Western world.
Well, I don't quite go wrong with that. However, much has happened there that I don't know about. But at the present time, the socialists and the people in Czechoslovakia are screaming that they're socialists, but liberal ones. Now, when I asked you, I know all about socialism. What is liberal? Does it mean a little business on the side? Is that what they mean by that?
This is a term that the Czechoslovakian Communist Party is using.
No, not the Czechoslovakian Party, but the people who are in revolt against...
The Czechoslovakian Communist Party, ma'am, is still in control of Czechoslovakia, but it wishes to free its economy from the restraints and restrictions that the Soviet Union has placed upon it, and it wants to break away from these restraints, but it still is a communist country, and it still adheres to the principles that are
How does it want to break away? I mean, what does it want that it does not now have? What kind of socialism does it want? I believe that they want some of them want a little return of their private property.
What they want is to be able to erect the factories and erect the utilities and erect the consumer industries that they feel are essential to the peculiar economic conditions in Czechoslovakia.
From whom are they going to get the... How are they going to get these things erected?
That's their problem, ma'am.
I understand that they want to do business.
They're struggling as a satellite nation to get out of under from the dominance...
Leave alone the dominant business. Supposing it is, would they rather buy from other countries like England, France, America?
They want to trade with Germany. And after all, before the Second and First World Wars, Czechoslovakia had trade relations with Germany. They also want to export as they see fit. They want to import as they see fit. In other words, what they're hoping to do is to create a semblance of better
economic conditions. Mr. Blauman and Mrs. Donna, I'm sorry, I'm having trouble with Mr. Blauman's line, so I'll have to disconnect.
I have another question.
But I'm sorry, I'm having trouble with the line, and we can't hear him too distinctly. Thank you for calling. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Henning Blauman after
Mr. Blauman?
Station identification.
Yeah.
The year 2000... is a little more than a generation away. For our cities, the question is precisely this. Will the new millennium mark a celebration or a wake? If you think you can sit snug in a suburban split level while the cities slide downhill, you're only kidding yourself. Slums won't stop at the city line any more than commuters do. What happens to our cities happens to our suburbs. Together we can remake our cities. We will. We must. If you think there's nothing you can do to help, think harder.
Send for the free booklet, The Turning Point. Write Night Call, Pomona, New York. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in the country to Henning Blauman about the Socialist Labor Party. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Once again, Del Shields.
And while we are attempting to get Mr. Blomain back on the line again, we're having a bit of a difficulty, not a bit of a difficulty, but some difficulty with the line. He's calling in from Minneapolis, so our engineer is working on it now, and he should be returning to us shortly. We have calls standing by now in Charlottesville, Virginia, as well as Sacramento, California, and in New York, and we'll be taking those calls in just a moment. Our guest again, Mr. Henning Blomain of the Socialist Labor Party. And we are discussing tonight why the candidate of the Socialist Labor Party should be the next president of the United States. During the past number of weeks, we have been very grateful with the response that we have been receiving via phone, or I should say not only via phone, but also via letter. And we'd like to remind all of our Night Call listeners that you are always privileged to write us at Night Call in Pomona, New York. So if you don't always get on the line, but there is a pressing question you have that you feel that we should be able to pass on to one of our guests, we would be more than happy to do so if you would drop us a note. All right, we'll take our next call, this time from Charlottesville, Virginia. Is Mr. Blomain back with us? All right, we'll talk to Mr. Glidewell, who's calling in from Charlottesville, Virginia. Mr. Glidewell.
Yes, sir.
We're waiting to get Mr. Blomain back on the line, but you and I can talk in the meantime.
All right.
All right, what was your question, sir?
I'd like to find out just how much support that gentleman has candidacy, and, just what type of person supports him. What group, what faction?
How much support that is presently being given the Socialist Labor Party? And the second question, sir?
What group actually does support him? Is it Democrats or young people or Republicans or mixtures or what?
What group supports him? Are you a socialist, sir?
No, I'm not.
Do you favor the party?
Not generally, no.
Is there anything in the party that you find appealing? Anything in their party platform?
I don't know that much about it, and I couldn't really say.
All right, so I'll take your question, and as soon as Mr. Blomain comes back on the line, we'll give him these questions, so stand by. Okay?
Sure.
Thank you for calling, sir. This time to Sacramento, California, Mr. Grenadar is hearing Night Call over KERS-FM. Mr. Grenadar?
Yes?
How are you, sir?
Pretty good.
We're having a bit of a problem with Mr. Blomain. We're trying to get him back on the line, but in the meantime, we'll take your question.
Okay, I just wanted to ask...
I beg your pardon?
That's your guest. An establishment of a working class as the rulers of the United States.
Right.
I'd like to know what would happen to, let's say, like the executives and the people up in the higher echelons of business in society.
What would happen to management? Is that your question? Mr. Grenadar?
That's my question.
Right. What would happen to management if the Socialist Labor Party took over the various industries?
Right.
All right, sir. Thank you for calling. I'll give him the question. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and again, we are having a technical problem trying to bring in Mr. Blomain, and we should be getting him very shortly. In the meantime, our telephone numbers once again in New York is 866-5010. That's our New York telephone number, and of course our East Coast number, and for the Midwest is area code 212-749-3311. Mr. Blomain?
Yes, sir. Yes?
Thank you for getting back with us.
Good.
While we were trying to clear the problem of your line, we had two calls that came in, one from Sacramento, California, and the question was, what would happen to industry in the event that... the Socialist Labor Party took over the various factories. What would happen to the management, rather, of industry?
Well, I think it should be recognized that management is a very, very important and necessary function in carrying on social production, whether it's under capitalism or under socialism. The only difference under socialism is that the management committees and the superintendents and the foremen and the administrative bodies collected in the Industrial Congress will be elected by the rank and file. Under capitalism, they are appointed from above by the capitalist owners of industry. So what we are going to do with the industries is rid ourselves of capitalist control, exploitation of labor, of the greater part of the wealth that labor now produces, and bring about a situation where labor will get the full social value of its toil, and through our elected management managers, who will be subject to immediate recall, we will be able to carry on production efficiently and distribute the wealth that we produce today, which we can produce in superabundance, distribute this equitably to all of the people.
Mr. Gladwell called in from WINA, listening to Night Call from Charlottesville, Virginia. He had two questions. One was, how much support does the Socialist Labor Party have here in America? And his second question was, what group supports your party? And he was interested, I think, primarily in an age group.
Well, I believe, sir, that we have considerably more support for the program of the Socialist Labor Party than is actually evidenced by the letters we receive and requests for information. In any case, we certainly have not as yet achieved the necessary majority of support, but we are headed in that direction. What was the second question?
The second question was the age group.
The age group of
right.
people within our organization?
That is supporting your organization, right, sir?
Well, we have members of all ages in our organization, including young people, including middle-aged and elderly. And there is no other organization in America which supports the Socialist Labor Party. It's self-supporting by its members and its sympathizers.
Mr. Blomain, this time we'll go to Boston, and Mrs. Jones is hearing Night Call over WBUR-FM. Mrs. Jones, good evening.
Good evening.
Hello.
Your question, ma'am.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I wanted to ask Mr. Blomain, is the name?
Right.
Yes, he said that he, well, you said in the introductory statement that he was opposed to...
Very difficult to hear here.
Okay, someone mentioned that you were opposed to communism and capitalism, but I don't see any difference between socialism and communism in listening to you.
That's a good question, ma'am.
Uh-huh. Well, what is the difference?
Let's see if we can resolve it, then, very briefly.
Please?
You know what they have in Russia, to repeat an answer that I just gave to another questioner. What we have in Russia is a wage system, a system under which they produce wealth for the benefit of the bureaucrats in large measure who are in control, that is the communist bureaucrats who are in control of the state which owns all of the industries and the land and resources and social services there.
Uh-huh.
Now, this certainly belies the fact that they have socialism, because Marx and Engels and Berlin and even Lenin on occasion pointed out that under socialism, we would not have a political state, we would not have a wage system, we would not have production for sale with a view to profit, we would not have classes. Yet the Soviet Union has every one of these institutions. Now, how can we call that socialism when it is at utter war with the principles laid down by the founders of modern Marxian socialism?
Well, what is socialism?
Socialism is collective ownership, common ownership of all the tools of wealth production and distribution. It means production for use. It means that everyone is going to get the full social value of his toil. And in order to carry out this job, we have to be organized into socialist industrial unions, elect our own foremen and superintendents and management committees and representatives in the Industrial Congress. Then we will have bona fide socialism.
Yes, but every...
Along with it, because we can produce a superabundance with our modern technology, we'll be able to settle this question once and for all of providing everybody with the abundance that is now possible, and we can devote our leisure time to developing our intellects, our spirituality, developing our physiques, our appreciation of art and music. And if some of you just want to go out fishing on your leisure hours, this will be possible.
Yes, but everyone cannot produce the same. I mean, would that mean that some people...
A little louder, please.
...would be working harder than others?
How's that?
Everyone cannot produce the same. I mean, everyone...
It's very difficult hearing you, ma'am.
Everyone does not have the same ability. I mean, some people would produce more than some. I mean, would this mean that they'll still be getting equal to what someone cannot produce?
Well, ma'am, have you ever worked in an automobile plant?
No, I haven't.
Well, you know, on the line there is no competition.
Uh-huh.
If there is competition, you'll never get an automobile produced.
Uh-huh.
Everybody has to cooperate.
Yes.
The pace is set. So everyone along that line has to work in coordination with the next fellow on the line, a group of fellows on the line.
Well,
this is true of social production.
Uh-huh.
Now, even though some people have more ability than other people,
yes,
under socialism, the reward will be spread around in such a manner that even those who do possess greater ability will receive the full social value of their toil.
Uh-huh. It seems to me that competition is a good motive for life, though.
Well, you know, we operate these industries beautifully for the benefit of the capitalist class, and this question of whether one is superior or inferior doesn't even enter into it. We do a beautiful job for the benefit of the capitalist class.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, if we take and hold and operate the industries in the interest of society as a whole, well, certainly we'll do a still better job, regardless of the individual differences.
Yeah, well,
we can't do anything about. We have to recognize they're there, but nonetheless, instead of working for the benefit of a parasitic capitalist class, we're going to work for the benefit of society as a whole.
Yes, but that is true. But I mean, the problem really is prejudices in America. If we can erase the prejudices, then I think that everyone can profit very well in capitalism.
I think it's a great credit to the human race in many, many respects. Suffering the conditions, the social conditions which the American working class has over these many years been subjected to, including poverty and unemployment and then numerous wars, and yet has been able to keep a measure of sanity. The fact is that the prejudices and the hate and the disillusionment and the suffering is a direct result of the corrupt and needless social soil that capitalism itself creates. It brings up
Mr. Blomain, I'm sorry, but Mr. Blomain.
We'll turn out decent human.
Mr. Blomain, we'll have to break for station identification. Mrs.
Right.
Jones, thank you so much
thank
for calling.
Very much.
Thank
Good
you.
Night.
Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Henning Blomain after station identification. Next week on Night Call, Monday, former Congressman Brooks Hayes on just how honest should a politician be. Tuesday, folk singer Joan Baez on what she says the nonviolent protest should be. Wednesday, Cornell University chaplain Father Daniel Berrigan, he says the draft is a bloody mess. Thursday, sex expert Dr. Mary Calderon on sex and society. And Friday, Esquire magazine political commentator Dwight McDonald, he says we need an entirely new American constitution. Political ethics, nonviolent protests, the draft, sex and society, and a new American constitution. All this next week on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in the country to Henning Blomain about the Socialist Labor Party. Call Night Call Collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And a welcome to the Night Call stations who join us for the second half hour. Our guest tonight, Mr. Henning Blomain of the Socialist Labor Party, who is running for President of the United States on the Socialist Labor ticket. And our discussion tonight is why the candidate of the Socialist Labor Party should be the next President of the United States. And he's calling in from Minneapolis, and this time we'll go out to Cleveland, Ohio. Mr. Presser is hearing Night Call over WERE. Mr. Presser, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Shields.
How are you?
Pretty good.
Your question, sir?
It's a two-part question. First part, I'd like to know, is the primary function of Mr. Blomain's running for office, or the Socialist Labor Party, to win that office, or is it education? And the second part, if it's to win the office, how will the SLP rule after winning? And if it's education, how will they go about getting their point across, and how will they win their goals if it's only education?
This is a good question, sir. In the first place, the Socialist Labor Party is an educational organization. It is an agitational organization. But being a political party, it has a political objective, and that is to elect candidates to the office of president, vice president, right down the line. But when the majority of the people have come to the decision of supporting the candidates of the Socialist Labor Party as a majority, then implicit in this is the recognition that in order to establish socialism, it becomes absolutely necessary that they organize in the industries into socialist industrial unions on a national scale to back up the right that is expressed at the ballot box and take and hold and operate the industries in the interest of society. Now, the function then of the political party of socialism, the Socialist Labor Party and its candidates, will be on taking political office to adjourn it. Adjourn it completely. All of the political offices, all the political constituencies, and hand the reins of government over to the industrial administration that the working class, through its socialist industrial union organization, will have set up. And then we'll carry on production through industrial democracy and for the benefit of all of us. The second question, well, I think I already answered that. It's both it's also educational, agitational, and it has a political goal, which I already outlined.
Well, assuming that the Socialist Labor Party should happen to win an office, or should happen to win, what would prevent somebody from ruling, from grabbing power? What would prevent somebody from setting himself up on top as a dictator and saying, okay, I won, now it's me, and you do as I tell you to do?
Well, that's a good question, too. But I've stipulated, and we emphasize and never tire of emphasizing, that under socialism, because the industries belong to all of the people, we're going to have complete rank-and-file control, so that if a foreman or a superintendent or a member of the management committee or one of our industrial representatives in the Industrial Congress fails to come up to the conditions that we have laid down for him to observe, we can hold an election at any time and recall that individual or individuals back into the rank and file and nominate and elect someone who will direct the various processes of production more efficiently than he did. In any case, we will have complete control under the, complete control in the hands of the rank and file. You know, Thomas Jefferson admired the public meetings way back in his day, and he emphasized the fact that one of the principal reasons for its success was rank and file control of those people who represented them at public meetings. They were subject to recall at any time. Now, that was political democracy, the only kind that was possible at that time, because of the material conditions. But now we have a material condition that makes possible the production of a superabundance of the good things of life. And with complete rank and file control, we will have the situation well in hand at all times, and no danger of somebody getting up on top of us again. And certainly, having gotten rid of the capitalist system and the capitalist class as a class, putting them to work to produce the good things of life, there's no prospect that the working class is deliberately going to allow somebody else to come along and erect themselves as dictators over them.
Mr. Presser, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. Tonight, Mr. Henning Blomain, the candidate for the presidency on the Socialist Labor Party. And we go out to Bridgeport, Connecticut. Mrs. Cash Scone is here at Night Call over WSTC in Stamford. Mrs. Cash Scone?
Yes.
Good evening.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I've been waiting quite a while. I haven't got a question, but I did want to get some definitions straight. for everybody listening that I forgot your guest's name, but I think you'd agree with me that Marx and Lenin called the working class the proletariat. Am I right on that?
That's true, but in this
market... And Marx also, please, let me finish my point. Marx also, I want the people to know, you know, we're talking about definitions, and most people, you throw proletariat around, but most American people don't take the time to find out what proletariat really means to a communist or a socialist or a Marxist-Leninist, which is one and the same. And the proletariat, in the minds of a communist or a socialist, is thought of, and I'm quoting Marx, to be stupid, uneducated workers and dupes, and they have to be pushed along toward a revolution. They are so stupid that they couldn't even have a revolution without the help of the communists or the socialists. This is where you come in. This is your meat, of course, to get right in the middle of things and to advocate the overthrow of capitalism. And I think that the ironic thing is that only in America, thank God, only in America, we can still have someone like you talk about the abolition of a capitalistic system, you know, without you even getting a shot right in the back of the head. Because in your country, or whatever country you, your goals and your achievements and your aims are for, and whatever theory you're espousing, it certainly isn't American. A socialist party is not an American party. There's nothing American about it to start with. And I think that most people, if I would have just advised this, that if they get into the terminology, they would find out exactly how you are insulting their integrity.
Well,
that's my point. You talk
Mrs. Cascone, let's allow our guest to answer you.
All right, guest, answer me.
You bet. Anyone who charges the working class of America with being stupid...
Marx said that, and I'm quoting him verbatim.
...also condemning the beautiful TV sets and the houses and the automobiles and everything else that you yourself possibly are enjoying in some measure. This working class of ours is far from being stupid.
Well, Marx thinks it's stupid, and I'm...
Mrs. Cascone.
It is true that they have behaved in a manner contrary to their best material interests, but this is due to two reasons. In the first place, capitalism has been able, to a degree, to provide a measure of security that to a large extent is insecure. Secondly, we have a bunch of politicians in America who have been lying to this working class for many, many years. They've lied them into the belief that capitalism could solve the problem of poverty and racial tensions and that they could get rid of war. And they haven't accomplished a thing in all these blasted years to bring about a solution to the problem. I say it is not a case of the working class being stupid. It's just a case that they haven't awakened up to the realities of the situation.
You're a politician, all right, but you don't give them any answers other than the socialist line, which is no answer to their problem.
Well, I'm certainly not going to give the so-called Republican or Democratic solution. They don't have one. And the Socialist Labor Party has the only possible solution. Get rid of capitalism and you'll get rid of all the...
Get rid of capitalism, and you don't even have to have a clock to know what time it is during the day.
Mrs. Cascone, thank you. Thank you for calling. Thank you for calling.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
This is Night Call in New York, this time to Olympia, Washington. Mrs. Bard is hearing Night Call over KUOW. Mrs. Bard, good evening.
Yeah, good evening. Well, I would like to say that I have my doubts whether another party like the Socialist Party would be able to solve the problems, because the possibilities for doing that are within our present system. And the only thing that keeps it from working as it should be is because too many of us refuse to obey law and order. You know, we hear so much about law and order these days, and it usually is applied to the lower group of people, but I think if we had law and order in the upper echelon, that the people who earn the money would pay their taxes, that they would pay a decent living wage, share the profits equitably with the people who produce the wealth, then this could be done under our present system, because if you get a socialist regime in, for instance, you would run into the same human frailty of, wanting to keep more power, make more money, and for personal profit. And I think just obeying law and order, as we have them on the books now, they would solve a lot of the problems. Wouldn't it?
I'm afraid that you're utterly wrong and your views are utterly stupid.
I cannot hear you.
In the first place, place man in social conditions under which he has to struggle and strive and claw and trample on the rights of others in order to just keep his head above water, and you're going to create, you're going to bring about the conditions, or have the conditions, I should say, where man's hand is at another man's throat. Remove those social conditions. Establish happy and compatible social conditions which socialism will make possible, and you will thereby suppress the evil tendencies in man and bring out the best in him. Now, you say that capitalism can solve these problems. Well, let me ask you this. How come that Mr. Johnson admitted just the other day that since 1900 up until 1968 there have been 100 million people destroyed in all of the wars that have been fought in these 68 years? How come that we're spending hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars for war purposes? These very conditions are cannibalistic and anarchistic and result in people being worrisome and fearful, and they rebel against this. It's becoming a moral issue. Capitalism stands in the way of progress. And I have yet to find a working man who would say or argue against socialism on the basis that if I ask him, if you produce $6 worth of wealth and you only get $1 back, that socialism will make it possible for you to receive the full $6 of the wealth that you create, that this is against human nature and will not improve his condition. It's utterly ridiculous. Capitalism can't solve the problem. In fact, it creates it, and it's going to become increasingly worse. And it's only by the working class taking over the means of production which they now run, from top to bottom, and establish collective ownership, that we can get the full social value of our toil and not share it with an absentee, parasitic capitalist class.
Mrs. Bart, I'm sorry, we're having trouble once again with Mr. Blomain's line, and I'm sorry, but I'll have to disconnect you. Thank you so much for calling. This is Night Call in New York, and while we're in station identification, we'll ask our engineer to check through the line again and see if we can get our guest to back a little bit clearer. Thank you. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Henning Blomain after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call. Would you believe a turned-on, tuned-up, radical Episcopalian minister who's blowing his head as a resident fellow of Yale University this year? You'll have your chance to believe it or not tomorrow night with our guest, the Reverend Malcolm Boyd, author of Are You Running With Me, Jesus?, and presently appearing in the new film, You Are What You Eat, with Peter Yarrow, Tiny Tim, Super Spade, and others of note. Malcolm Boyd's subject is What's Happening to Our Youth? Especially those who have decided to drop out from the American dream. The Reverend Boyd wants a new kind of religion, one that has some relevance for our youth. And he's not talking about jazz masses. He means a church committed to solving the ills of our society. The Reverend Malcolm Boyd, author of Are You Running With Me, Jesus?, tomorrow night on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in the country to Henning Blomain about the Socialist Labor Party. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And we are back once again, and in just a few moments we'll have our guest back, and just so that our Night Call listeners will be acquainted with some of the problems that we have on Night Call, We are carried on more than 71 stations across the country, from Mobile, Alabama, and Sacramento, California, and San Diego, California, and Des Moines, Iowa, to Seattle, Washington, and Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And the attempt to connect all of these lines and to be sure that we have the very best circuits and the very best conditions sometimes causes us a bit of a problem. So we have our guest back again, Mr. Blomain. Our apologies once again, sir, but we want to be sure that everybody's going to hear you as crisply and as clearly as possible. And we apologize. This time we'll go out to Atlanta, Georgia. Mr. Gaither is hearing Night Call over WAOK. Mr. Gaither, good evening, sir.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. Your question?
Well, my question concerns the problem of an incentive, because I feel that in the capitalist system, the basic incentive for a man striving to do better and to produce more is money. And because in this system, man feels that, well, the more I work and the better I produce, and the more discoveries I make. I'm speaking chiefly of, the scientists and the engineers. I know a little more about that than I do about the others. But in a way, in this system, it's true that they will make more money. And this money is a very big factor of the incentive that they have for working and for producing more. And I think that the economic system would suffer really a breakdown, because you take away man's drive to produce in the system which you are proposing.
Mr. Blomain?
Well, as a matter of fact, what you'll be taking away under socialism is the drive of a small handful of people who today own America, root and branch, from the incentive of continuing to exploit the working class, competing with each other in order to get control of additional labor supply. As a matter of fact, the incentive of the capitalist class will be interfered with. Is this what we're concerned with? I should say not. We're concerned with the incentive of the working class. What is its incentive under capitalism? The harder the working class works, the sooner they work themselves out of jobs. And under socialism, the harder they work, the more of the wealth that they're going to have in their hands. Because we're not going to share it any longer with an absentee, parasitic class which today owns America. If we all own America, its industries and its land and its resources, why, we'll have all the incentive in the world to work as hard as we can so that we can enjoy the superabundance that we produce. And we're going to carry this job out very, very efficiently, so that we can enjoy the leisure time that will be possible under socialism and develop ourselves physically, mentally, and spiritually, and become better human beings than we are or are capable of being under this exploitative system of capitalism.
Mr. Gaither, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and this time to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Mr. Dobrik is hearing Night Call over WTMJ. Mr. Dobrik, good evening, sir.
I would like to ask your guest a question, but first of all, I would like to make a point in clarification. I was wondering if your guest would agree with me. I get the impression that some of your callers from around the country are confusing socialism as an economic system, and they are confusing this by making it a political system at the same time. In other words, they assume that socialism as an economic system encompasses other sorts of political controls on the individual, and in many cases this isn't necessarily true. For example, the closest country that I can think of would be Sweden, that is politically very democratic, but at the same time has something that is very close to a complete socialist society economically. I'd like to ask your guest if he agrees with me in this respect.
Well, if we had socialism in America, as you seem to imply, well, then we wouldn't have the social and economic problems that confront society today. As a matter of fact, you can call anything under the sun socialism, but if it doesn't square with the fact that the industries will be commonly owned, as they are collectively or commonly operated or socially operated today, a society in which the wealth that is produced will revert back to the producers in entirety, a society in which there is no more exploitation, where we no longer share the wealth with an absentee parasitic class, where we have industrial democracy completely under the control of the rank and file, then we will have socialism. Minus two, of course, the political state, which is nothing more than the executive committee of the capitalist class of America today. We'll rid society of these institutions and establish the society of freedom, economic democracy, and abundance for all, and make ourselves better human beings thereby.
Yes, but while maintaining while setting up your goal for economic democracy, what I would like to have made clear is whether you would still at the same time maintain our present political structure, a federal political structure of judiciary and executive and legislature alongside of this economic democracy that you propose.
Well, on the contrary, we won't need the political state under socialism. What will we need it for? It doesn't serve any useful purpose in a socialist society. It's only necessary in a class-divided society because it is the government of the capitalist class. It administers the affairs of the capitalist class. And it's true every once in a while they throw a bone to the working class in an effort to keep it satisfied. Under socialism, we don't need such an institution because we won't any longer have classes and industrial administration, industrial democracy, is the very essence of a socialist society that is under the control of all of the producers.
I see. May I ask one more question, please?
Yes, sir.
How does your party and the philosophies of your party, the Socialist Labor Party, differ from the philosophies of the old line socialists as were led by Norman Thomas, and also the other socialist party that's quite active today, the Socialist Workers' Party, or sometimes known as the Trotskyites?
Very good question. You know, if there hadn't been a split in the Russian Communist Party way back in the early 20s, we would never hear of the Trotskyites. But there was such a split, and it concerned matters of differences in policy and in nationally and internationally, and it led to a split in the Communist Party, the Stalinists on the one hand and the Trotskyites on the other. Now, what do they want in America? They want a modified form, something that they consider more suitable to them, a modified Soviet regime in America. And I'm sure that the working class of this nation is not going to substitute one ruling class, the present capitalist class, for a bunch of bureaucrats to rule over them as they do in the Soviet Union. This is the Trotskyites' position, nonetheless. The old SP, the Norman Thomas outfit, where is it? It doesn't even exist anymore in America. It's defunct. And you know why? Because the Franklin D. Roosevelt took their platform, their planks, their splinters and all, and put them into effect to help shore up the capitalist system by throwing bones to the working class. Norman Thomas admitted this in 1936 when he said, "The Franklin D. Roosevelt has taken some socialist party ideas and used them as props for a shaky capitalist structure." Well, if that's all Norman Thomas accomplished, by gosh, that proves what side of the battle he has been on. A fake socialist, and a fake socialist he remains. And he has been supporting all kinds of capitalist candidates in recent years. Away with fake socialism, and let's have bona fide socialism. We've had enough of this.
Mr. Dobrik, thank you for calling.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and we've reached that point where we can no longer take any more phone calls, and we're very sorry tonight for the difficulties that we had technically, and these things will come up now and then, but we certainly thank you for your patience. And Mr. Blomain, we thank you so much for being such an excellent guest tonight on Night Call.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
This is Del Shields in New York, and as we said earlier, if at any time that a question that you have that you'd like to pose to one of our guests does not come through because you had to wait for some time before you could get on the line, remember you can always send us your question and you can always write us a note and we'll try to get the answer for you. Remember, our address is Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip code 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip code 10970. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, Malcolm Boyd, author of Are You Running With Me, Jesus, on Dropouts from the American Dream. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.